As someone in the economic space, I can tell you there's a lot of moving parts in this conversation. The ingenuity that goes into the debt conversation is absolutely astounding for the kind of people we put in that space. They almost assume an immortal posture. They have zero regard for what will be the impact of the decisions they make around the issue of debt. It's almost like they think the consequence of this will come in some future impossible tense where they'll no longer be around. Interestingly, it hasn't taken long for it to strike, and now we are already in the middle of this. But then what then comes out of this is part of the conversation of what the 2010 Constitution tried to give us, which was devolution. What would you say is your assessment of the devolution conversation?
This is probably the revolution in the Constitution, where it was supposed to come from. We intended to deconstruct the colonial state through devolution and therefore uphold the implementation of the Constitution through devolution, because we understood, and that was the correct analysis, that if we push devolution to work so that it provides services and it provides welfare to the public and the means of income, then the devolved units will become the basis for the people of Kenya to negotiate with the state, and therefore over time actually change the DNA of the Kenyan colonial state. But we underestimated the kinds of people that we had in office. And so what they have done is that when they realized that money will go to the counties and the national government will be rendered irrelevant, they did two things that I would call masterstroke. First is that they went out and borrowed heavily, but ensured that the counties could not borrow without the guarantor of the national government, the guarantee by the national government. So by so doing, the national government is building roads in every county across the country, not the devolved units. And what is happening, that is why borrowing has gone above from where Kibaki left us. Kibaki left us at 1.8 trillion. We are now at 11, and 11 within 9 years. And that 1.8 trillion was for 45 years, 50 years actually. But within 8 years, we've borrowed like four times, five times, you know, what Kibaki and Uhuru, I mean, and Moi and Kenyatta were able to borrow. The debt has squeezed out money that is available to be taken to the county. So I told you that there's only 600 billion to be shared between county governments and then provide the national services, run the military, the judiciary, etc. The rest, 1.17 trillion of our national revenue, goes to servicing debt. So the debt trap is ideological. It is a re-centralization strategy, and it has worked effectively, because there's no money available for the county. So they have been starved of money. They cannot operate. That's the first thing that has happened with devolution. And it is the most effective thing that has rendered devolution irrelevant. The second thing that was supposed to be done by devolved governments was to form the regional blocks, establish the regional banks, and by so doing, make credit and capital available for jumpstarting the economy, the economic sectors in each region. By so doing, we will provide employment, and so therefore, devolved units were supposed to become the centers of productivity, the centers of capital formation. That is the only way we were going to deconstruct and delegitimize the colonial state. This has not happened. The private banks in this country, the regional banks cannot take off. Because if the regional banks take off, the Lake Region Bank, the Noreb Bank, the Northern Pastoralist Counties Block, the Coastal Jumuiya ya Pwani, if all these ones take off, they establish their banks, they are going to support cottage industry, because they wipe their money, savings from Siaya to Mandera. That's the money they bring to Nairobi and they give to themselves. That's the money they sell to government. That's the only way these banks make money. So if you establish the regional banks, the deposits will not be mopped. There will be no money to sell to government. So that is why they had to close that strategy immediately. The regional banks cannot be established, and they have not been established. So forget about these academic conversations we have about transfer of functions, resources should follow functions. The real problem we have with devolution is, number one, that the public borrowing for the national government to be seen to be doing things that the counties cannot is to delegitimize devolution. And it has worked. So this late payment, sometimes non-payment, non-release of resources from the national. So the decentralization strategy, there's a book I'm writing, which hopefully I'll be ready to publish next year, about the missed opportunity of devolution, the missed opportunity of devolution. Devolution was supposed to be the engine, the bypass surgery we were supposed to do in reconstructing and deconstructing the state and to establish Kenya as a democracy. We have missed that boat, and we are involved in very academic discussions about public participation. Did the people look into the budget? Did the people give views? They are giving views to a budget which is not going to be funded. So that is not the problem with devolution. Of course, then there's the corruption, there's the incompetence, there is the establishment, and a very critical thing that has been used by the decentralization agents, which is duplication of services and functions. This, we calculated, NCCK did a study, I think 3 years ago, which basically showed that the duplicated services between the national government and the county costs this country nearly 145 billion shillings every year. Same forest officers, water officers, education officials, health officials. The Ministry of Health still controls the bigger budget of health when it is not providing the services. That's why it has money to buy funny containers in Mombasa. That's why the national government is still dictating the so-called MES, M-E-S, which is the forced leasing of equipment to public hospitals across the country. Yet healthcare is 100% devolved. So devolution is designed. We underrated the people who were given the power to implement this constitution. They are determined to ensure that devolution does not work. So how have the 22 governors who have been in office for 10 years performed? They have really tried. A lot of them were very corrupt, but there are a few in there who have really tried to do something. But it's a drop in the ocean looking at this of affairs since independence. Some of them have done very well. They have done what the constitution and the law requires of them. Some, most of them have not done well. I would say four out of those 22 who have done 10 years have really tried. They have done what was expected of them, but they have not succeeded because they were not allowed to get money in good time. They were not allowed to enter into projects and contracts with the investors and therefore jumpstart the economies in their counties, etc. So a lot of them were forced to deal with the politics in their counties and to survive. It has therefore been out of, in terms of performance, 3 out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, seeing just in terms of how the complex the terrain of devolution has looked like, you know, from the re-centralization strategy, you know, this gut reaction by the people at the center to try and claw back power and try to claw back that agency from, you know, the citizens and the different players we had sort of dispersed this power to based on the mandate of this constitution. And I mean, you know, those who've been there for 10 years, of course, about 50% of the governors did not come back. The 22 came back. I mean, the four or five who've done a good job really went all out, the challenges notwithstanding. But then we are looking up ahead again. We have, I mean, as you had mentioned, about 10 months, about 300 days, to the next elections. The civil society is still here. We had talked about it's being revisited also, not just the judiciary, you know, the financial and the capacity, you know, of the civil society is being challenged heavily, has been challenged heavily. But then you're still one of the key players and will still be one of the key players going into this coming elections rather. Yes. What in your assessment is the role that the civil society is going to play?
Thank you very much. We have basically, I want to be very positive because I'm now a participant here as being part of civil society. in the since 2013 in the Jubilee Manifesto. I think it was paragraph 40. Was it 49 or 52? Paragraph 52 of the Jubilee Manifesto said that civil society organizations in this country have become too powerful in advocacy and agenda setting. The Jubilee administration will ensure that civil society organizations do not involve themselves in advocacy and political activism. That is how they articulated it in their manifesto, no less. From the word go, I mean, the people of Kenya elected, did they elect them? Supported uh-huh. individuals who made it very clear that they are going to deal with civil society, and they labeled us as part of the evil society.
They
were Cora network with the judiciary. So that is how you now see the nexus of who was supposed to be under attack, civil society and the judiciary. So we were called the evil society, and the Wakora network was supposed to be in the judiciary, and they are being, the Wakora network was supposed to be supported by civil society, evil society. So we defined five roles for ourselves, and these five roles were actually articulated in 2006, not recently, 15 years ago, at what we called the National Civil Society Congress. National Civil Society Congress. That's when we established the National Civil Society Congress. And the Congress said it is going to perform five roles. We call them the five A's. I'm going historical so that I can be able to contextualize and come to what needs to be done today.
Uh-huh.
So we say the first A, which is the role of civil society, not just in elections, but in governance, state and nation building. So we were that broad, not just in elections, but election, the transparent elections, but also in state and nation building and governance generally. First A was supposed to be the A of analysis and research, evidence mm-hmm. production. So that's a very important factor if you are going to engage. Reason being, and we saw it from then, we were doing scenario building in 2006 when we were talking about this. We saw that the government that was coming was not going to be like the Moi government, where civil society had more educated, more exposed people than those who were in government. The next government we saw, it was going to have a lot of civil society people, the Kiraitu Murungis, the Martha Karuas, and everybody else. And indeed, civil government now is, the people in government are very learned. They are more learned than the people in civil society. They yeah. attend very high-level conferences. They have done important courses. It is not for want of exposure, training, and skilling. Government people are more skilled in every area than civil society. So civil society is not going to play a major role until our analysis A, the A of analysis, research and evidence is apt. That requires money. That's the money that we have been denied. The second role, the A of awareness creation. Once you've done analysis, then you need to do civic education, civic engagement. You need to do political education. You need to do democracy education. Create awareness about the impact of corruption, the impact of impunity, the impact of poor leadership. That is in the function of awareness creation, which includes a lot of outreach and so on and so forth. That A has been crippled almost completely because of the strategy that the Jubilee administration adopted in 2013. The third A was the A of agenda setting and advocacy. Since 1989, in fact, let's go to 1982, it was the work of civil society to set the agenda under DTM, under Mwa Kenya, under Release Political Prisoners, Kenya Human Rights Commission, LSK, name it, non-state actors like Ndingi Mwana Wanzeki, the church, the religious leadership, and then came NCEC 97. It has been the work of civil society to set the agenda in under what we call the NGIA. That agenda setting and advocacy has almost been neutered because, again, this government does not just close down organizations, it kills people. It kills people. Moi's government mostly used to jail, and it used to banish people into exile. This government kills. This government, under the new constitution, is so brazen, it does mm-hmm. not respect the constitution. You saw what happened to Miguna. Moi mm-hmm. was unable to get Father Kaiser, Father Dolan, all these people out of this country. Even foreigners, Moi was unable to get them out because LSK and everybody else were always, the embassies were always going to stand firm. after the entry, the powerful entry of China, that landscape shifted. Government completely outmuzzled the Western countries and their embassies in Nairobi. The embassies in Nairobi sing the song of the government of the day. We call it GOTD. The fourth role that civil society is to play in this election, in governance, in state and nation building, is what we call accountability, enforcement. You cannot do accountability when the accountability drivers have been destroyed. Civil society, the media, the judiciary, in the investigative agencies, the prosecutor, all the ESCC and all those kinds of things, when the drivers of accountability have been demolished,
yeah,
there cannot be accountability. Even the very basic things like election monitoring and observation, it is academic these days in Kenya because we do not have a capacity to even monitor elections seriously, like we did in 2007 when we actually even ran a parallel voter tallying and so on and so forth with other agencies, and we knew how the outcomes were going to look like. So even basic things like election observation, we are unable to do competently across the country because there's no civic education. There are no whistleblowers who have been equipped to do this work. Kenyans are on a survival mode. And Reverend Joya normally says that when people are in need of relief, they cannot discuss concepts. Kenyans are a people, 90%, 95% of Kenyans need relief. Even civil society organizations and their members, they need relief. They can't even pay the school fees of their children. People are suffering. So how can these people who need relief be organized enough to raise conceptual questions around accountability? The final item that civil society is supposed to do, and not just the NGOs, but the faith-based organizations, the churches, the mosques, the leaderships of, LSK and the other associations, the trade unions, that's a broader civil society conceptualization from a political science point of view. All these people are struggling for life. You've seen what has happened to KNUT, and immediately Kenya National Union of Teachers was demolished. You've seen what has happened to the teachers. They are now being required to get practicing certificates after every 5 years. You saw what was happening to the doctors. You've never seen a country where doctors are brutalized, tear gassed, jailed for what?
Yeah.
For saying we need to discuss the state of healthcare in Kenya, not increase our salaries. They were not saying increase our salaries. They were saying the conditions of healthcare provision in this country, we can't treat people. We can't promise you that we can treat people under these conditions. We need to invest. We need to modernize. They are wanting. Can you imagine that the doctors, our sons and daughters who have spent 6-7 years in the university to get a degree, were not saying increase our salaries. They were saying the conditions are too pathetic. There's no research, there's no preventive, there is no medicine, there is no gloves, there is no linen, there is no correct. So what did we do to them? We said that these people should be jailed. And did Kenyans come out to stand with doctors? They said, no, bring those, what were they called?
Cuban.
Those bring the Cuban doctors. These idiots are disturbing us here. And even progressive civil society people were saying these things.
Wow.
So we have dismantled, oh my God, we have dismantled the civil society as it were. It can no longer play this role of accountability. Even the role of, ensuring that we can promote. Access promotion is the fifth, is the fifth role that a civil society is supposed to do. Is access promotion to rights. Access promotion to rights. So I have to do that kind of a lengthy assessment before I tell you that I expect very little from civil society. We are going to do our traditional thing of election observation, a bit of voter education, but that is not where the decisive thing happens. The decisive thing happens when civil society organization is able to mount civic education, is supposed to partner with the religious leaders and the other non-government organizations and civil society agencies like trade unions and so on and so forth, to ensure that people are vetted and only the correct ones can vie for elections. That we are going to be unable to do. Civil society is not going to be able to do civic education that can be able to make a difference in terms of the kinds of people that people elect.
That's
civil society is, so that is where we are. I mean, when you look at the role that civil society is going to play, if you talk about the broader civil society as we go to the 2022 general election.